Luxury doesn't always look like designer clothes, high heels, and a dream fashion job in New York City. Sometimes it looks more like quiet morning moments getting ready for a big day, hand-stitched embroidery on a vintage table linen, and barefoot commutes to a home office in a Spanish apartment. Christine Linda Back has always appreciated these small details, and with her bridal loungewear brand Lindy Lindy, she's leaned into these details even more. Each piece is crafted using vintage textiles that share a luxurious story of their own. In this episode, hear why her lounge and sleepwear designs were a perfect fit for brides, how Christine's identity and lifestyle massively changed when she quit corporate, and the ways that Christine has considered scaling that align with her values. Welcome to How Fitting, the podcast for slow fashion designers and entrepreneurs about creating clothing and growing a business that fits your customer, lifestyle, and values. I'm your host, Allison Haynes. Do you want to get your designs to production without compromising your brand's fit, vision, or values? My pattern making services are tailored to help womenswear slow fashion brands do just that. You can learn more and book a free introduction call at howfittingpatterns.com to see if we'd be a good fit to work together. Now, on to the episode. So, Christine, welcome to How Fitting.
Thank you so much, Allison. I'm excited to chat today.
Same. From following your work, it really seems like you value the craft of sewing and the traditional artisanship that goes into both textiles and garments. So I'm curious, where did that appreciation stem from?
Yeah, well, I guess, I mean, I've been sewing since before I can even remember. So my mom said I was around 5 years old and just literally begging her to let me use her sewing machine. And so I think, you know, obviously that's kind of where the understanding how clothing is constructed really, you know, just from making doll clothes when I was a kid, literally. And then I think more advanced skills came from working in the luxury fashion industry and on the business side of fashion, but literally getting to see the clothing, see the details, feel the fabrics really gave me an appreciation for that luxury end of fashion. And then I would say like the third piece is from vintage textiles. So that's really where I work a lot in now, and being able to see the gorgeous hand embroidery that we used to do 100 years ago is absolutely amazing. And it's definitely a whole different level.
Yeah, definitely. And it is amazing, especially considering no machines were doing that. Like, it was hand stitched, all of these vintage textiles, and just the amount of time that goes into that is kind of unheard of in today's modern fashion industry.
Totally, totally. I mean, sometimes I think about that, like the time. And, you know, I'll get kind of impatient just sewing, you know, a button on something. it was a different time for sure.
Yeah. So where did the idea for Lindy and Lindy start? Like you said, you worked in luxury fashion. What kind of brought you then to your own business and brand with Lindy and Lindy?
Yeah. So, well, when I left my corporate career, it was about 8 years ago. So 2015, around then, I was retail director for Emilio Pucci, managing 5 stores in the US.
Oh, wow.
And traveling to Italy to do, you know, for market and all of that. And I pretty much had achieved everything that I wanted to achieve in my corporate role. There really wasn't anything else that I had, you know, this dream of in my career. And I was super burnt out on top of that. And so I made the really tough decision to jump away from corporate. And a lot of people thought I was crazy because, you know, it was an amazing company, an amazing job. But I was super burnt out. Living in New York is not for the faint of heart, that's for sure. So I ended up, I had had a blog, which I still have, Sewing in the City, where I was blogging about outfits that I was sewing and, wearing around New York. And so I kind of understood the back end of running a blog, the tech, the building of the sites. And so when I left corporate, that's what I just naturally transitioned into doing, was building websites. So I had a really good understanding of tech. And then that led me to understand all of the amazing things that you can do online, as opposed to just brick and mortar, which was my entire experience before that time. So that was a major shift for me. So yeah, just being able to work online and see that you could do direct to consumer so easily. And I actually first started my own digital brand. So Sewing in the City is completely digital. I sell home sewing patterns and I do online courses. And so yeah, so that's kind of that was the first thing that came about. But what happened was I had all of these patterns that I had spent, time, money, and yeah, resources developing, grading them, doing all the sampling throughout the size ranges. And then I started, which we can talk more in detail, but I had access to all these vintage linens and kind of combining the two. I was like, I have all these patterns. I have all this fabric, and it just was really natural then to start a ready-to-wear direct-to-consumer brand from there.
That's quite the journey. And
Yeah.
I bet it was still like such a big shift, even though you were in fashion and kind of knew about retail. Going from such a large, fashion business to then
Yeah.
kind of as we do in small businesses, do everything in a small business, is quite the shift. Were there a lot of things that, even though you're selling online direct to consumer versus in a brick and mortar store, one of many, were there things from your background in kind of corporate fashion retail that have really helped you in your own businesses?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think kind of on a general scale, the kind of the confidence, I guess, that I don't even know that I have the confidence, but just knowing, kind of knowing the business a little bit, I think helped just open the door of possibility. Whereas maybe if I didn't have that first career experience, maybe it would have seemed like too far of a jump to actually start my own brand. Yeah, so I think that's one aspect that just kind of got me through the door. And then I think you're really having a good understanding of or not maybe not even like understanding, but just awareness of luxury marketing versus maybe fast fashion marketing. And that has allowed me to kind of direct my own vision of like how I want to present the brand. So yeah, I think that's been really helpful. It's such a good question because it's not something I've really thought about, but it's a really great question to ponder.
I feel like it's so true, even for people I've spoken to on this podcast, where their kind of first career or day job career has nothing to do with fashion, but there's so many things that just shape our perspective or shape our experience, confidence, like you were saying, that feed into kind of the, whatever the new endeavor in fashion is that you're working on. It's always interesting to hear.
Yeah, and I can imagine like any industry that you're coming from has little tidbits of value that you can bring with you no matter what industry you start in. So, yeah, I think it's like that the curiosity and the passion and the interest are kind of what get you going first. And then, the skills, you either find people that have the skills, or you learn them. So, it's a process.
So speaking of the skills, so you were more on kind of the business side, it sounds like, in your corporate career. So, but you obviously knew how to sew. So in terms of the skills of, that you need in your business related to the actual garments now, was sewing something that you had to learn at kind of a different level for your own brand? Pattern making, like what types of skills and things are you doing in your business?
Well, I figured out pretty early on that actually production, while I do sew, I really am more, I consider myself more of like a home sewer or a sample sewer. And production, I quickly realized I couldn't add it to my workload. So that led me to finding local seamstresses in my community that do small batch production for me on a production level. So as far as skill goes, they are the best of the best. And so that for me is such a lifesaver. I don't think I could ever do it all myself, nor would I want to or encourage anyone to. So that's been a huge element that has allowed me to take bigger orders. Like I just got my first wholesale order.
How exciting.
Thank you. Yeah. So that was something, I could not have fulfilled myself. So yeah, that's a really one clear distinction I made early on that I'm not production. But I do like samples. If I develop a new pattern, I'm doing all of the samples. And I do have a pattern maker that I work with. So, I can do the first pattern to my size, and but getting it onto the computer and doing the grading is all I'm very lucky to get to work with professionals in that capacity as well. So yeah, I think really just the sample sewing is what I've been able to do, save a little bit of money doing myself.
And yeah, and that's a, I feel like that's a big part of the creative process or like the fit process is the initial pattern and the initial sample. 'Cause it's like you're, I don't know about if this is the same for you, but I'm always kind of working through and troubleshooting the pattern and the construction in that first sample and seeing how it works with the fabric and all of that.
Totally. Yeah. And making the little adjustments, like you see it in your mind one way, and then getting that translated into fabric, sometimes it doesn't, it takes a little bit of sometimes I can do like three or four samples until I get it perfect. And so yeah, lots of little tweaking that happens to get it perfect.
But I feel like it's all in the details. When the garment looks 90% done, you're really only halfway there. It's all those last 10% that make all the difference in the fit and in the quality of the final product, I think.
Oh my gosh, you're so right. It feels like it's only half done when it really is 90% done, but that last 10% is so important.
So, what are some of the either design or construction details in your pieces that you just love?
Oh, well, one of the things that I'm really proud of and that I love is that we don't use any sergers, so the overlock machines. Everything inside is we'll use French seams or a really beautiful like bias tape finish on the raw edges of the seams. And I love that because all of the fabrics we use are vintage, anywhere from 100 to 20 years old. And so for me, I think it really is a great detail to go along with the fabrics without using modern equipment. And it just, yeah, I love French seams, and it works so beautifully with the lightweight cottons that I mostly use. So yeah, it takes a little bit more time to produce. And sometimes French seams are a little, like if you get seams crossing over each other, it can be just a tiny bit bulky. So it takes a little bit of like redesigning certain things in order to make it possible, but it's worth it. I really love that detail.
Yeah, they do look like particular, like talk about luxury, French seams, is where it's at. So you use these vintage textiles. Where do you find these? Because I think, it's such a big part of the garment, but then it's not something that you're like, oh, I've nailed it. I love this. Now reproduce it as many times as needed. Like each one is kind of unique, right?
Yes. And that is the, I would say the a benefit and also a drawback of what I do. It's true. Like most things will only make one of, and which is, one thing that makes them so incredibly special. And we mostly focus on the bridal market. And so we're making like robes or like kind of loungewear pajamas for the getting ready moment. So while a bride is getting her hair and makeup done, she has a beautiful robe with embroidery and lace and these, really beautiful antique details that we bring from vintage linens into their pieces. So it works because that is kind of a special moment. It's not something that necessarily would work. Well, it would work in mass production for sure, but we really are targeting that client that loves the uniqueness. But it does make it hard to scale. But in general, there's like four different types of linens that I look for. And within those types, I know that this type makes a robe. This type makes the pajama set and so on. So I've really kind of got it down to a science and from what's available versus what I can sew with. And I source them locally all in Spain in vintage markets. Yeah, just I literally hand select all of the linens myself.
That makes it so special.
Yeah. And it's a little bit of like the for me, buying the fabrics, it's a bit of like finding, the gems in the or the needle in the haystack kind of a thing. It's always fun to discover these beautiful new pieces. And I do think at some point, I may look at doing some reproduction, but definitely by hand and still with kind of those old world details. So that's something I've been thinking of in the future, just to be able to scale a little bit.
Gotcha. I'm curious, do you source the materials first and that kind of inspires you for the different designs you're going to create for the garments? Or do you design the garments first and then try to find these textiles that work with each piece?
Yeah, that's such a good question. I think in the beginning, I was literally just sourcing the textiles and buying them with no idea what I was going to do with them, but just I couldn't leave them behind. I couldn't not buy them. And I was using some in sewing in the city, so I have an Instagram account and a YouTube channel where I, document like sewing things. So I was using them, but I was buying them first, and just because they're beautiful, and then from there, understanding, oh, this actually would make a really beautiful robe, and kind of playing with the embroidery placement and everything, and so then the design kind of came, and I would say I'm still working in that way. I'm right now I'm in development of a new pattern that I actually designed the pattern with upcycling with, these antique textiles in mind. So that's just like the evolution of how it's come about.
Yeah, so with that pattern you're working on, what is different either in the process of designing that or in the type of design you created as you were designing with the textiles in mind? How did that make a difference in the actual piece?
I mean, I think ultimately the actual design has to be fairly simple, because just to keep the focus is really on the textile as opposed to any kind of intricate seaming or details done with like piecing the pattern. That I kind of have to keep the pattern pretty simple.
That makes
Which is
sense.
great for pattern making. I mean, it kind of it's and fitting as well, but it's also that I have to think about fit And you know, if I'm shipping something to a bridal party, let's say they order, you know, one piece for the bride and three pieces for the bridal party, and they're all different sizes. So, you know, kind of making sure that fit is something that can be as flexible as possible, so that, you know, it looks good on everyone and it's easy to fit. So yeah, a lot of little things go into every pattern, every design. But really, I think ultimately it's simplicity.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So, what type of sizing do you offer? I know you offer like made to order and custom options. Do you offer bespoke sizing as well, or is it do you have set sizes that are then made to order?
Yeah, so mostly I have set sizing. So I do letter sizing, so extra small through extra large. But yeah, I haven't had the opportunity yet of anyone saying like, oh, I need, you know, something outside of this size range. So far, everyone, you know, everything has fallen within that. But yeah, I'm definitely open to other sizing. I do offer, you know, different fitting on certain garments, like knowing that, for example, that my wholesale account in New York, it's a private bridal salon.
Oh, cool.
And so if they have a customer that does have a larger bust, that's something that we know right out of the gate and can design, for example, the pajama set. I can do a full bust adjustment on the front of the garment. So things like that I can definitely easily cater to. Which is, I think, you know, something that is part of the bespoke process that is really, really unique, and different than fast fashion, where you just kind of get one size.
Yeah, for sure. So, how did or like why did you decide to focus on this bridal kind of loungewear market for the pieces? Because I imagine you can use these textiles in a lot of different contexts and designs. So, why bridal?
This is such a good question, and I think it was really, really organic, where most of the textiles that I am finding are white. I do actually use beautiful embroidered sheets, so top sheet, for some of my pieces, and they're very nighttime. So I think it kind of lent itself to being pajamas and nightwear, loungewear. Certainly, I know I've seen photos of customers who have, you know, paired them back to jeans. So, you know, the pajama top then becomes a blouse that you wear with jeans or a skirt or something like that. So I know that they can be worn in other scenarios, but I think from a marketing angle, the bridal angle made it very niche and easy to speak to, because it is that getting ready moment. It's a time when brides are looking for something unique and special. So I knew that it was a big enough market, but it was niche enough that it would make marketing easier than just kind of doing a, you know, for everyone kind of a line.
And that's something I'm always talking about with clients too, is like, who is the specific customer? Because then you can design kind of like you said, with them in mind, with the little details, with the fit, with the marketing. You can speak to them directly and it really appeals to them more strongly than just, I made this for everybody.
Yes, exactly. It does. It makes marketing so much easier. And even the first couple of photo shoots that I've done, you know, it's kind of made the direction a little bit easier as well, with accessories and kind of imagining the moment to create the mood of the shoot. So it definitely, I think, as hard as it sometimes can be to narrow down, I think it definitely helps, especially in the beginning. And I've often thought I can definitely branch out from there as well. But if I have a really strong core, strong message, then people will be attracted to that clear messaging, hopefully, you know, from other outside of that clear niche as well.
Bridal, I often think about it's like bridal clothing is an interesting market because in some aspects it's very like high end. There's a lot of thought put into, you know, when brides are like picking out what they're gonna wear. It's going to live on in photos. So it is very like special and in that way. But on the other hand, it's often just worn for, purchased for the one day. I'm curious, what is your perspective on kind of bridal wear as it relates to sustainability and kind of the longevity of these textiles and pieces that you're creating?
Yeah, it's such an interesting question because I've seen so many statistics about the wedding industry and the waste, and because it is just a one day thing. I know that my pieces, like, you could definitely wear your robe, beyond that one day. I hope that people would. The pajama sets as well. I know that I see a lot on Pinterest, the bridal party getting ready sets that are made in China and they're made from polyester, which there's nothing wrong with that. But I would see those as kind of more of that one-time wear, and then they end up in the thrift store later or in the, bottom of your drawer. Whereas I hope that my pieces being like really beautiful cotton, soft textiles, would hopefully you'd want to use them for more than just the day. So, but it sustainability is something that I believe in so much, and trying to navigate my place in that, and it, is something I'm always thinking about. It's not easy in the fashion world though to be truly sustainable. I find, I am buying secondhand textiles at the core of what I do. I'm not using new fabrics. So I think, that is better than nothing. But then I think also just the quality, 100% cotton, really soft fabrics that have been washed enough times that they don't have chemicals lingering in them. So yeah, really hopefully designed to be worn for a really long time.
That makes a lot of sense, and I agree. I'm not sure there is a like perfectly sustainable, possibility for any brand, because anything we're doing uses some resources, but being able to think more consciously, like you have, about reusing these textiles, using the type of seams that are both beautiful and very durable, that are gonna, hold up these pieces for a long time in a fabric that is comfortable to wear on your skin that you're gonna want to pull out again and not just wear on your wedding day.
Yeah, I hope so. And nothing, we don't use like the big monograms like bride or anything like that. So the pieces really are can be beyond the wedding, even Mother's Day gifts or so they really don't have, aside from being white or sometimes like lots of blue embroidery and things like that, aside from those little cues, they really aren't anything specific for a bride. That's just kind of how I envision them to be worn.
Yeah, that's a great point. I see a lot of those where it's there's something on it, where it's something where it's like bridesmaid, and it's like, well, what am I going to do with this afterwards? But keeping it more universal, like it's made for a specific purpose, but it's not confined to that. I think that's a really great point.
Yeah, exactly.
So, what are some of the other values or things that are important to you that you've incorporated into Lindy and how you run the business?
Yeah, well, one of the things I love is local production. I think that has been it's I love being able to support my local community and people that I take bags of things over to the seamstress and she sews them and then I pick them up, two weeks later, and I know her first name, and it's like it's a relationship that we have, and it's a really special one. And making suggestions about, oh, have you thought about doing, this type of finish? This would be really beautiful. Like she's amazing. She's part of my team. And I think the seamstresses have been a huge part of my business, just feeling like I have production that I can really rely on and is close by. It also allows me to work really quickly, especially when we're working with like bespoke things that I can offer that service because I have production, really close at hand. And so I think that's allowed me a lot of flexibility as well to say like, oh, I want to launch this thing, or I want to make this new style. And, a couple of weeks later, I've got it in my hands. And also I've been doing launches as drops. So as opposed to doing seasonal collections, I'm doing drops at certain intervals, usually every month or so. And I have a waiting list. So, people join my wait list and then they get the email that there's these new pieces in the shop. And so I've been able to do that type of launch style because I have production really close by. So the time from cutting to sewing to listing it on the site is really short.
Yeah. So do you offer then, it sounds like you don't just do the custom, but you have kind of stock pieces as well. Do you carry kind of a lot of stock? Do you try to have kind of like each design and each size within each drop, or how do you kind of plan what inventory you're listing each month?
Yeah, I do a lot by size. So I know my best size sellers, so I try to lean into those. I'll pull different fabrics that I want to create with as well. That's something, just what's my sense of the trend right now. Do I want to launch like a long sleeve pajama or a short sleeve pajama, kind of based on the weather, I suppose, as well. So yeah, I do carry stock. So there are pieces that people can buy now on the site. It also gives them an idea of the styles I have, and then I have some bespoke pieces, and then also just people DM and say, I love this style. What other, fabrics can you make it in, or do you have four? I need four, one for me and three for my bridal party, kind of a thing. So it just kind of depends.
Cool. So with custom pieces, or when somebody's saying, I love this style, what other textiles do you have? Do you find that customers can envision like what that textile will look like in the design, like well enough to feel confident to buy? Or how do you kind of market those custom options so that people can they know what they're gonna get and can picture that?
I mean, I've played around with different photography of the textiles to try to get people to envision how it goes. I've thought about using like even AI to help me with that. I haven't dove into it yet, but I think that I could probably do something with AI. I think that luckily the people that I've worked with Bespoke, I think ultimately they kind of trust the process, and maybe they're not super super particular. They love something in that particular textile that is drawing them to it, and they're like, do your thing, kind of a thing. Like, I just love they love the aesthetic, so they're like, I'm sure that, I guess they're not like micromanaging the process of it so much. So I've been really lucky, knock on wood. But I'm sure, as it grows, it may be something that I offer less and just have more stock available or something like that. I've just been in business for a year, so still, still being agile and pivoting and learning from each experience. So yeah, but so far, I think people just kind of they allow me to just kind of do my thing.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So you're in Spain. Where are most of your customers located?
All around the world,
Oh,
actually.
nice.
Yeah, I've had customers as far as Singapore, the UK, California, and obviously all over the US. So mostly US based.
Gotcha.
I think it's just because I am American, so I understand the consumer behavior of Americans more than any other culture.
Yeah, that's so
And
fascinating.
anytime. Yeah, it's kind of fun when, sales come through. It's like, oh, where are they? Because I do all the shipping, so it's always interesting to know where people are. And I have done some paid advertisements, and I for that I target the US market.
Okay. And you said this boutique that's carrying your pieces now wholesale is also in New York?
They're on the Upper East Side. It's called the Jewel Box. It's a by appointment only bridal salon created by a bridal stylist, Julie Sabatino.
Nice.
She's a bridal stylist that's been, working in the industry for her whole career. And so yeah, she's carrying the pieces, which is really, really exciting.
Yeah, how did that partnership come about?
We actually met on a podcast, if you can believe it
Oh,
or not. Yeah. I was on her podcast when I was first launching the brand, just talking about my brand and the obviously targeting weddings and the bridal market. So that's how we got connected. We got connected through a friend who knew her and then knew what I was doing and said, "Oh, you guys have to connect." And then just it literally was just like 2 months ago, she called and said that they're opening this new store. So she had thought of me. So it was really, really, really an awesome opportunity. And it happened organically, which is great.
Yeah, that's so fun.
Yeah, it's definitely I hadn't considered wholesale before. I really was kind of against it just because of the my products don't necessarily lend themselves to doing like mass wholesale. But it's got me thinking about that as a maybe a store in Los Angeles, for example, or in key markets could be kind of interesting. But I love direct to consumer. There's just something about that I really love. So.
So I'm curious too, like each of your pieces are so intricate and then with these French seams and detailed finishes and laying out each pattern piece on each textile that they're very time consuming. So how do you then price your pieces, especially now with wholesale, selling wholesale? Because I know this is an area that so many designers are constantly kind of second guessing and thinking like I should be charging more, but can I charge more? And it's kind of an ongoing debate. So how have you approached pricing your pieces?
It's an ongoing debate for sure. I can identify with everything you just said. I mean, it's so hard. It's so hard. Especially with wholesale, it's something I don't have the answers on at all. Using traditional retail pricing is just I have to have more of a markup because there's just a lot of there are things that I'm not accounting into the pricing. And so I think that's something I've been struggling with just, and I know I have room to raise my prices. So that is something that, yeah, it's such a struggle, Allison. Like I wish that it was easier.
I know. There's no like magic bullet answer to it either. It's like so specific to
Exactly.
every brand and the costs and the things you value, how much you're willing to pay for production and then yeah, wholesale or not, and what your market is. And yeah, there's so many factors that go into it.
And I learned like through my digital products that it's always easier to start a little bit lower and then you can always raise them at any point, as opposed to starting high and then realizing you overpriced and then trying to backtrack because you'll make the first purchasers angry when they see your prices are lower. So that's kind of been the way I've always approached pricing in anything that I've done. I'm just like, well, I can sell five at this price, and then when I sell five, then I'll raise it to this price, or then so it's always easier to go up than it is to go back.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So but then there definitely comes a point where it feels uncomfortable when it in I with everything I've sold, it's like, okay, now I think my prices need to go up. So, whether it's digital products or services or clothing, I think you kind of there's a point where you reach where you're like, I think I need to raise these. So
Yeah, and you've been in business long enough doing this for a year where you kind of have a feeling at this point, I'm sure, of is this sustainable for you as the business owner? Like, is it all kind of shaking out to work or is it not? Because you can like run the calculations on an individual piece, but like you said, there's often like little things that you forget to account for, or the overhead, or just your time and energy putting into it that you underestimate on, and then you realize at the end of the year, oh, that wasn't actually, the math didn't math as well as I thought it was going to, and like adjust things from there.
Yeah, exactly. Even, just like the time it takes to schedule drop off of the pieces to the seamstress, that all those little things, they take up time and energy. So there are a lot of things beyond just the 3 cents for the care tag and the label and the fabric. There's a lot of things that are not necessarily on the spreadsheet when it comes to accounting for pricing, that should be. So
For sure. So, what does success look like for you in this business? Like, what are you wanting from the brand?
such a good question. Oh, you've been asking really, really thoughtful questions. I so appreciate it.
That's what I try.
Yes, it's got me thinking. So there's a do you know the brand Cezanne based in France? Yeah, they've recently done a collaboration with another Spanish brand based in I think they're in Galicia, but they're called Andion. And I've followed them for a while because it's a mom and daughter, and they do some styles that are very similar to mine using repurposed vintage linens. So we have some styles that are kind of sort of similar. Of course, they've been in business for a long time and are, really more well known. And they just did a collaboration with Cezanne. And you know how they say when you are jealous of something, it's actually something you get that feeling because it's something that you want for yourself, or use it as like an indication of like, oh, okay, that's something that interests me as well. So not necessarily jealousy in a bad way, but like, wow, that's so cool, kind of a thing.
Yeah, like aspiration. You look up to that and you're like, ooh, I want that too.
Like a sign, kind of like the little guideposts that sort of tell you, where what it is that kind of lights you up, as opposed to other stuff that I see that, I have no interest in doing. So yeah, I love the being a very niche, specialized brand. I think in my experience with luxury fashion, those brands that were like Emilio Pucci, I mean, they're definitely global and well known, but they're still a family brand. Emilio Pucci's daughter runs it, and her kids are involved, and I love that aspect of it. So there's something about being a small brand with a lot of heart, but being, a little bit more well known than I am now, I suppose would be fun. And kind of planting the flag in the sand for sustainability. And I mean, we have a huge textile problem in the world with like just masses of textiles that end up in landfills and wherever, or just thrift stores. And being able to think creatively about how to use those things, I'd love to be able to inspire people to do that as well. So I think there's a lot of elements, but I think for some reason I've just always loved fashion since I was really little. And so it just doesn't seem like there's anything else that I would want to be doing with my time.
I feel the same way. I grew up always sewing and making doll clothes too, and it just naturally became now, part of my career.
I think it's so cool. And I mean, I think it's also testament to kids. And I think if my kid was asking me to sew, I think that would be like amazing. And you just never know where those little hobbies can actually influence like whole careers. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's fun to look back.
Yeah, like with doll clothes, and here we are basically still doing the same thing, just
Yep.
on a bigger size.
Yeah. So with these goals that you have for the brand and the values you want to put forth in the world, how does that guide kind of your day-to-day decisions in the business?
I mean, I think it's like a dance between revenue and growing the business, but then using the resources that are mostly available. Like I kind of spoke a little bit about before, I've had this kind of an itch to reproduce some pieces that are taking pieces from my collection and, reproducing the embroidery or the design in some way that I could scale pieces a bit more. That's something that I would that for some reason I've been thinking about that a lot lately. But then, it's also like, well, what is that? How is that going to look like from a production standpoint? I would need to find a new skill set, someone who could do, or multiple people who could do embroidery. And what would that look like from a cost standpoint? So I mean, I think it's always going back to the spreadsheet and the numbers, and then balancing that with the creativity and the cool things that I want to do. But just, yeah, it always has to go back to the spreadsheet at the end of the day.
It's an fashion is an art, but it's also a business. And so there's like
Yes,
both
yeah.
sides, the creativity and then the technical and then the underlying business foundations that support it too.
Exactly. Yeah, if it doesn't make money, then it's not a business at the end of the day. And so it definitely has to turn a profit at least at some point. And yeah, I'm totally self-funded, bootstrapping. So everything that I make just gets turned back into new styles. And I've been lucky that Sewing in the City has had, brings in a consistent level of revenue, so that I have, have a little bit to play with Lindy Lindy. So yeah, but it's slow and steady. And I think for me, I've just come to accept that is the way it is. And on some level, it's a bit safer for me, because I'm not necessarily investing like huge amounts of money in a first collection, and being stuck with a lot of excess inventory. I'm working, really lean, and so I can pivot and make changes as, really quickly as I need to. And then, I think kind of what's starting to come out is, okay, now that I've got a good foundation, like looking at what is scaling going to look like. So I think that's really the big question that's on my mind at this point.
That's great that you have the freedom to kind of experiment and play with Lindy Lindy because Sewing in the City is able to fund that for you, where you still have creative control over the brand and you aren't pressed to, like, I need to do something that's gonna make a whole bunch of money this month. And I feel like slow fashion, like, it is slow, both in the making of the garments, but then also growing the business too, where it's like you put a lot of thought into, do you want to scale? If so, how and what does that look like? And it's not an immediate, just like easy, make 100,000 of these and, sell them situation.
Yeah, and somebody once said to me, you wouldn't expect a baby, like a newborn baby, to run, and you wouldn't get mad at them for not running when they're just born, And so I've always looked at the business as the same, like, okay, we're just starting out. We're not running yet. And so just being really patient with it as it grows. Of course, if I wanted to find an investor, and there's so many different routes that a fashion brand could go. But for me, and I would say my nervous system, this has just been the best way for me to really enjoy it, and kind of dip my toe in safely and really, yeah, have fun with it. So I think there's a lot of different ways that you can start and scale. And for me, this has just been the way.
Yeah, I totally agree. So, in running this brand and just throughout your whole career in both of these businesses, how has that shaped how you see yourself or other people?
Gosh, I think that it's been an evolving kind of re like assuming new identities, I would say.
And like,
I
how
know that
so?
when I, well, like I remember really clearly at some point, maybe I don't remember how many months it was after I'd left my corporate career, but I literally had I wouldn't say an identity crisis, but I really was became so aware that I was not that person anymore. And it was really strange. Like I didn't work for anyone. I didn't have the pressure to perform to someone else's expectations or anything. And that was a huge moment. And kind of then gradually assuming the identity of a business owner. And I think lately, just in the last couple of months, I've started to feel really proud for what I've built. Especially with Sewing in the City, I've been at it since 2019 officially, and it's fun. Like it really not every business makes it past 5 years,
Yeah,
so
that's a
it's
huge milestone.
yeah. Yeah, it's really but it definitely that identity part, and then being a fashion brand owner or whatever is another identity, and it's fun. I enjoy it. But it definitely it these two brands have changed the way I see myself inherently, just because of my job is different than it used to be. So,
Was there
yeah.
like a particular moment that you remember thinking, like, I'm not the same person as I was with this particular job role and identity? Like, or was it more of a gradual realization?
Yeah, I think it was. I mean, I remember having a really like distinct moment of when I left my corporate job, like this is like I don't I'm not this person anymore. But I would say it's really been gradual. Even just at the beginning of May, I went I still had a storage unit in New York. Because when I left, I wasn't sure like if I was gonna stay in Spain or what was gonna happen. And so I put everything in my storage unit and I moved with just, a couple of suitcases. And so I had to go back and empty out my storage unit, and it was like going through a time capsule. Yeah, like suits, all the clothes I used to wear to work. And really, I think a lot of it is just with clothing, more than identity, more just like the clothes. So yeah, I think that was like another layer to the process of changing, getting a new identity, just realizing, wow, I used to dress like this and now I would never wear that suit. Like I would not even have anywhere to wear that suit to. So yeah, just totally different lifestyle as well.
And I think fashion is very much that it's part of our identities. And so it's like changing roles makes us change the clothes that we wear, and of course that feels different too. So
Yeah.
it goes much, fashion is so often seen as like superfluous industry, very superficial, but it's so much deeper, I think, than that when you really dig into it and see the impact that our clothes have, or the kind of expression of that our clothes are presenting.
Totally. Yeah, like I would never ever ever have gone to work with flats. Like that was not a thing for me. And I had, so many pairs of gorgeous heels and boots and things that now I of course I'll wear them here and there, but I don't wear heels every day. I'm on my feet in my studio, cutting and creating content, doing Instagram and all these things. It's not necessarily that I'm in an office or even around people a lot of the days, so
It's but I like the way I get to work. I think ultimately I wouldn't mind having seamstresses that are, come to my space and work, part of the day. I think that would be really fun to have to get to work with a team on hands-on again. But for now, yeah, it's just a lot of times I don't go to an office. I have a studio here in my I'm lucky enough to have an apartment where I have an office and a studio just in my apartment. So it's been really great. Yeah.
Yeah, I also work out of a room in my house, so it's the commute is wonderful.
Yeah, the commute is like the best part. Grab the coffee and you're there.
Well, this has been just so amazing to hear more about your journey, Christine, and your businesses, including Lindy Lindy with these vintage textiles that are now bridal pieces. I have one more question that I ask everyone at the end of
Yeah.
the interview, which is, if you could communicate one value to the world through the clothes you design, what would it be?
Definitely, it would be confidence. So whether it's that getting ready moment and those beautiful photos that will live on forever, I would love women to feel confident in the clothes that I create, and I hope that they do.
Love that. Well, thank you so much for joining me. Where can people find out more about Lindy Lindy and follow what you're doing?
The website is Lindy Lindy. It's Lindy twice .com. And the socials as well. Instagram is Lindy Lindy dot shop on Instagram. And yeah, those are the best places to find me.
I'll put links to all those in the show notes. And thank you again.
Thank you, Allison.
That's all for today. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. And if you would like more episodes and resources like this about growing a fashion business that fits your customer, lifestyle, and values, sent right to your inbox, you can sign up for the How Fitting newsletter at howfittingpatterns.com/newsletter or at the link in the show notes. Again, thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join me again for the next episode of How Fitting.